Production. Recorded live.
Welcome. My name is Brenda Lanoff. I'm creator of the Brenda's Mindful Healing Show and Whispering Energetic Healing is the name of my company. I'm an intuitive counselor, energy healer, and speaker, and I love to work with many individuals with some challenging issues. It could be as to health. It could be as to business. It could be really as to anything around the world with Skype and on phone. Today, I am very, very pleased to be having a conversation with Anne Miner. So Anne is a consummate entrepreneur in constant motion. In addition to her unique ability to see possibilities, Anne has a knack for identifying the necessary talent and expertise to assess, plan, and implement change. A skilled facilitator, trusted CEO, advisor, and sought-after coach, Anne is often called upon to lead executive teams through the rapids of change, bringing clarity and vision as well as a strategic framework for implementation. So through her company, the Dunvegan Group, Anne helps organizations to strengthen and build stakeholder relationships. Now, that's including relationships with customers, employees, members, patients, students, and vendors. Seeing organizations grow through collaborative and continuous improvement and reduced customer and employee chum as they deliver enjoyable customer experiences fuels and strive to help people and companies realize their full potential. Anne has served on a number of industry and association boards, is the 2013 recipient of the University of Guelph's Alumni Medal of Achievement, and author of several books on the topic of customer relationships. So welcome, Anne.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you today, Brenda. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited about this whole avenue of working with business, women in business, and you're the very first one on this whole new chapter that I'm opening up. As an entrepreneur myself, it's so inspiring to meet women that have this tremendous background and achievements that you've accomplished. And to be a coach, you know, someone that we can look up to and learn from, and you have such a vast array of experience. It really is mind-blowing. When I was going through your website and just preparing for today, it's been amazing what you've accomplished. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you, Anne, and finding out What is that spark that entrepreneurs need to really launch their own business, and especially for women? So, Anne, I see that you've, again, been on various boards. You're a fundraiser supporting organizations that support women in achieving their potential. So thank you for doing that. You're also a certified trainer of the Platinum Rule, which I would like to hear about further, which helps build strong bonds with employees and clients. And you offer individual training, coaching, and group workshops on how to build strong competitor relationships with customers, employees, and so much more. So, Anne, tell me, what is different about starting a business or building a business today compared to when you started out?
Well, that's a great question. And first, I need to kind of put that in some context, because this is the 30th year of my business, Brenda. And so that tells you, number one, that I started my company when I was about 12 years old. And secondly, that I started in the last century. So the things that are different today include the tools, the technology, the ability for anyone to reach right around the world from their desk. Whereas when I started, we didn't have computers on everybody's desk. We didn't have Mr. Google. We didn't have, you know, voice over IP technology. Long distance cost $3 a minute. Just think about that, $3 a minute. So to have a 15-minute conversation with someone who was outside your local jurisdiction was $45. And as a startup entrepreneur, one needed to really think twice about how to get the best value out of a single phone call.
Wow, that does take me back, Anne. and from province to province, because this is in Canada, but in province to province, that's right. You would have to really think about, do I make that long distance phone call to my parents in the next province? So, wow, isn't that something?
Right,
and it was considered a real expense. So things have changed, obviously, tremendously within our lifetime.
They have. And so what were hurdles for businesses starting that long ago are simply not a factor today. So those are some of the elements that make it different today. But that's really only the tip of the iceberg. Because if you think about today's marketplace, the various generations that are in the market are quite different as well. Now, I think probably fair to say that you and I are baby boomers. Well, we, you know, moved through the marketplace as a tour de force. We were the largest contingent of human beings in North America, you know, for most of our lives, and we pleased ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Generation X coming behind us has a different perspective. And the millennials have a different perspective again, different values, different ideas about what's worth investing in, where to spend their money. And now we have the emergence of Generation Z. So the demographics and the psychographics of the marketplace are quite different than they were when I started my business. And these are things that I've had to adapt to. And even though I mostly play in the business-to-business enterprise world rather than in consumer goods and services, I'm still seeing that these generational transitions are having an impact. So those are some of the critical factors. Some of the other things that one might consider are that you can start a business on an absolute shoestring. And today's shoestring costs a whole lot less than a 1980s shoestring, because you don't have to use snail mail. You don't have to use courier, you know, unless that's how you distribute your product. But the biggest growth in businesses has come from information and knowledge related products, which can be distributed electronically.
Uh-huh.
So packaging, wrapping, binding, none of those come into play. What does come into play is the world of e-commerce and how to make the customer experience a very positive one. And that's what these younger generations are prepared to spend their money on, is experiences, as opposed to a car, maybe any car at all, or a bigger car, or, you know, a more luxury brand car. They have much different value systems than what we had.
That's very interesting. I just returned from a trip halfway across the world, and just by observing people in general, because I love people watching, but mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of young people and they are traveling, and I think just exactly what you said, they want the experiences. They're traveling way more than I did at that age. So I do believe that younger people do want the experiences. And then how do you capture their attention? How do you capture the attention of the millennials, you know, as
mm-hmm.
you know, So what is it? What, because they do want the experiences, what would you recommend for somebody that's starting out a business to capture that market?
Well, there's a number of things that I would suggest you do. I mean, it used to be that we created a product and then we went out into the marketplace and looked for a market.
Uh-huh.
So find out who would be, which demographic would be most interested in what we have to sell, what would they pay for it, where would they expect to shop for it, and drive it into the market. Whereas today, with the access we have to the internet and all the information that's captured about people using the internet, we can go in and find out what people are searching for. So rather than us just make up or invent something and then hope that we can sell it, we can go out and collect information on what people are searching for. So, for example, you've observed, and we can confirm or validate, that younger people are traveling more. So what are they searching for? What kinds of experiences are they looking for? And you can get all of that information from Google, actually, mm-hmm. and then create a product that fulfills the need that these people are trying to satisfy. It's a very different approach to the marketplace. So you don't even have to have an idea yourself. You can go and look at where the gaps are and create something to fill that gap.
That's interesting. So if an entrepreneur is looking to put their business online, do you feel that webinars still hold, is that something that people would sit in on or pay for?
Well, you know, almost every question you ask me is going to have an answer that begins with, it depends.
Uh-huh.
So we know that there has been a very successful trend towards, you know, giving value with little or no price tag attached to it. So give first as an approach and a philosophy of business. And when people see what you have to offer and they like what you have to offer, then you make available to them something more for which they pay more for.
Right.
And that has worked very well. Whether it will continue to work is almost anybody's guess, Brenda. My crystal ball mm-hmm. is as foggy as everybody else's.
That's so interesting.
And what I do know is that people create a following. So you create your personal brand, your personal arena of expertise, build a following, and then you fulfill the desires, wishes, needs, and expectations of your following. So that, again, is a very different approach to the marketplace than what has been true in the past.
If you were to work with organizations or companies, do you think that there's a place for coming in and doing perhaps some lunch and learn? Are companies open to that type of learning?
Yes, they are. And that kind of falls into one of a number of camps. So if what you have to offer is something the employee would purchase from you directly that would help to make their lives better outside of work, perhaps, the companies are often open to that. They're open to having experts come in and talk about lifestyle and how to have a healthy lifestyle so that their employees will be well and high performing when they come to the workplace. So that would be one bucket, if you like. There's also the lunch and learn option where you come in and you introduce, maybe you offer a workshop that helps the employee develop a job-related skill. And maybe you offer that to the HR department or whoever's responsible for training and development. And then, having been impressed by what you delivered, they would then contract you to teach it to a broader population of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what I've been, what I feel is current within the workplace. And for the entrepreneur that's just starting out, like they're thinking about it. In fact, they haven't even, you know, started out, but they're contemplating it. What do you think would be your best suggestion for them?
Well, first of all, I have some very practical suggestions. Number one, build yourself a treasure chest that will carry you for at least 6 months. So that you are not overcome with anxiety that you won't be able to pay your rent or buy groceries or make your car payment. Secondly, get insurance while you're still employed. So life insurance, disability insurance, and critical illness will be a very sound investment for an entrepreneur. And I'll tell you why. Often, the people that are starting businesses, this is just true of the general population, people are not getting married. They are having single lives. Mm-hmm. So you will become your own sole supporter. And if you were in a car accident or you fell down the stairs or, you know, heaven forbid, you developed some acute illness, you would have no source of income. Entrepreneurs, business owners, self-employed people do not qualify for our social safety nets. So these are two very practical suggestions that will help to ensure that we've mitigated the risk that you'll start a business and then find yourself with no income.
Uh-huh.
So having go ahead.
Yeah, no, very good advice. I mean, I personally left the corporate world for over 30 years. Now, mind you, I was a consultant for many of those years. But after having some personal injuries myself since I left the corporate world, I think your advice about the disability, life, and critical insurance, that's very important. So thank you for actually bringing that up today, and also as to 6 months' expenses put aside. So, yeah, very good advice, Anne. Thank you.
Now, let me confess that I didn't do that myself, so I'm sharing my experience with you to help other people not fall into the same pitfalls.
Uh-huh.
The other
right.
thing, another thing, I would suggest is that you get yourself absolutely crystal clear on what is your own personal why. What is your purpose? This is, you know, following Simon Sinek's, you know, book and leadership on know why you're going, why do you want to be in business for yourself?
Uh-huh.
Because that is absolutely the flag that you will follow, or the guy, you know, the guiding light that will keep you going. It doesn't matter what you do or how you do it. You may change those things over time, but if you know why you do it, then you can always follow that guiding light.
Absolutely.
So that would
I, agree. I agree with you.
And it's something to invest time in and invest in knowing yourself. So if there are things that are completely intolerable to you, you will be able to build yourself an organization, even when it's in an organization of one, that has very clear boundaries.
Uh-huh.
So you'll know what you will and you will not do. And especially when you begin your business. What typically happens is the entrepreneur will take every piece of business that comes their way, whether or not it actually fits with what they intended to be doing whether it's requiring them to bend into a pretzel, they'll do it for the revenue. And if you have the expenses set aside, you'll have a cushion. You won't have to do that. But what does happen is over time, you will figure out who's your ideal customer and who's not ideal. And then you'll have to cull out those ones that are robbing you of your good nature, robbing you of energy and resources, because they don't really fit.
Uh-huh.
So I certainly experienced that myself. You know, in the very early days, I took on virtually every assignment. Oh, I had a very clear idea of what I wanted my business to be and how I wanted it to progress and the types of clients I wanted to have. But I was prepared to compromise that because I needed the business to survive.
And I think most entrepreneurs, this is a typical story, I know for myself. And once you step out of that paying monthly, you know, job, it is very scary. And so you do compromise yourself. I have definitely have done that. And it's exactly what you said. Your energy is drained. And it's very, very stressful. And getting clear on the why is so important. But having the passion, so whatever that why is having a strong passion. And it just makes you feel so good and so light that when you have that why, there's no question of your purpose and why you're going in that particular, you know, direction. So that's extremely, extremely important to keep you in center and balance so that you continue on the path. Absolutely.
Well, and realize that there will be days,
yeah.
You know, and there might even be bumpy weeks where, you know, things just don't. And I describe this as the universe is not on my agenda.
Uh-huh.
The universe has not appreciated that needed to happen today in order for me to fulfill my own expectations of myself or my customers' expectations. So being really clear with yourself, knowing yourself, and being grounded will give you greater confidence and the ability to say no, because this is something entrepreneurs have trouble with.
So true.
Knowing when to say no.
And that the boundaries is so important, isn't it, Anna? I mean, it's been a lifetime learning for me, and I continue to have to work on my boundaries. But if you don't have strong boundaries, you can literally make yourself sick. And I'm a prime example of that because I didn't have the boundaries when I was working in the corporate world. So, boy, that is so essential. And if you don't have the clear boundaries, then get the assistance to get strong and find out why is that? What's contributing to that? And get healthy with your boundaries so that you can be that successful entrepreneur.
Oh, exactly. And again, this comes from life experience. You know, please don't think that I was born knowing to do all of these things. These are suggestions and considerations based on what I've experienced in life also.
Uh-huh.
And being very clear on your values and what's non-negotiable. What is absolutely non-negotiable. So then you, again, will be able to navigate those situations where you are in a position where your values are being threatened. You'll know what to do.
Can you give an example of that, Anne, that's happened with you? I'd be interested in what that is, because that's a boundary issue. So what would be an example for perhaps an entrepreneur starting out, or maybe somebody who's already in business?
Well, I give you an example from my own life experience. So I am working largely in the world that would be referred to as marketing research. And my profession has a certification that reflects the knowledge, skills, and experience that I have, and my commitment to follow the guidelines of our industry, and a code of conduct and a code of ethics. So I have lived to be true to that, and I describe that as being true to my craft. Now, I found myself working with a client where we had a change of leadership, and this is something to be aware of. If you're going into the business-to-business world, and I imagine it would apply in a situation where you dealt with households too, and there was a divorce or change of relationships, could threaten your business in a similar way. But there was a change of leadership, and the new leader was unhappy with the rigidity of the program that we were running for them. And he didn't think that it was necessary to be so rigid. And amongst those rules that we were operating by was the selection of who we would speak to, which customers would be contacted, how they would be identified, and that there would be no influence by the salespeople on who was selected, so that we were sure we were getting good, solid cross-section with a minimum amount of bias. Well, this new leader didn't think that was very, very important, and he wanted to allow the salespeople to identify the customers we would interview. Well, what do you think would happen if the salespeople were allowed to do that? Because this would be human nature, not because they're nefarious or in any way sort of operating outside of what would be reasonable. They would pick the customers that would be in a happy state and avoid any customers that had had complaints or delivery issues or quality issues. Well, that was not acceptable to me because it didn't give a clear picture of the true state of affairs. Uh-huh. So that was kind of step number one, if you like, or offense number one. The second was that, after the customer had given us their feedback, their salesperson would go in and say, "Geez, George, would you give me such a lousy report for? I got kids to feed, groceries to buy." Sometimes the customer would call us back and ask us to change their rating. Or the salesperson would call and say, the customer didn't say that. He told me he didn't say that. So you have to change it. And so we were under pressure from multiple directions to bend away from the guidelines. Uh-huh. To ignore our code of conduct, and it compromised my value of integrity. Uh-huh. And so we resigned that business. It was hard because it was a large portion of our business revenue. Uh-huh. There were a number of people who worked on that business exclusively who would be without work. But I'll tell you this, even the people whose jobs were lost through that decision were happy that we had refused to compromise our values. So it wasn't all that hard for me to know what decision I should make. That was very easy. The hard part was the implications, that it would have an impact on people's livelihoods.
Isn't it important to have values? Because I think if you look in the world today, you can see in so many areas on a political level of where are their values? And people can get really lost, or through the media, through television, is that where are the values? So to be able to stand in your truth and say, this is not working for me. I commend you for that. We need more people who are willing to stand up and stay in their truth. And in their integrity, we need leaders like that. And so, I commend you for that. And when we work outside of what our truth is, that's when we can physically break down. Our body will fall apart. So, Yeah, again, boundaries is so important, and like you say, the values.
Like, yes, and I can give you another story that was a little bit different. We had a completely different client who hired a new person in their marketing team. And so it's this typically we wouldn't have had a relationship with these companies at all if the players were in place when we started our relationship. It often arises after the fact. So this individual was particularly demanding, and that's fair enough, but not just demanding, demeaning and insulting, and used offensive language, and actually made one of my employees cry. And again, my position was we do not work in an environment of intimidation. We are not going to succumb to master slave. And my employees come to work to give their best, to continually learn, and to be helpful and supportive to our clients as they grow their businesses. They are not required to endure this abuse, and we won't. And well, and it was a woman, actually, Brenda. So it's not, this
Okay.
wasn't a situation, a
Right.
gender-based situation. It was two
Right.
women. And when the
I've
owner of
had that. Sorry, and I've had that situation where, yeah, this isn't so just a gender. This is situation. This is I've also worked for women and I've had some horrific experiences. So women can be very hard on women. So it works definitely both ways.
And her, the owner of the company, thought he could, bring her under control and, ask me to reconsider. And I thought about it and decided no. So that was at an earlier time in my business. And again, it's difficult. And you need to be clear with yourself about, what is of value to you. So respect is another core value to me. Receiving it and giving it. So this situation violated that value. Now, I realize that we've largely been talking about how the entrepreneur can prepare themselves as a human being to be in business. The other things that, we'll often hear are you have to do your homework, which is an expression that I find quite meaningless. Like, what does that mean? Do your homework. So if you've decided that you wanted to open a bricks and mortar retail shop, that would be one thing. And I imagine that your homework is going to involve finding out what's the cost per square foot, what are the taxes on the property, what does it cost to heat and light and on, so that you can prepare a budget. So you will know what kind of revenue you will need to generate in order to support that operation. And you might think that whoever you're leasing or renting the space from would be helpful with that, but they won't be. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is to get their space occupied. And often within a retail environment, there's multiple components to what you will pay, including a portion of your sales. So doing your homework in that instance is to get a clear understanding of what's involved. And this information is all available. In my day, you would have had to go to the library, you'd have had to go to the city, you'd really have had to work hard to suss out that information. And whereas today, it's readily available. And another thing that was kind of standard operation or standard operating principle, if you like, when I started in business was you had to get an accountant and you had to get a lawyer. Well, that's a myth. Today, you can do your own bookkeeping. We have online tools. Technology has taken over that. And you can even incorporate your own business online.
Uh-huh.
So you don't need, or you can utilize a service like Legal Shield. So you don't need to spend your time and your energy identifying those experts until you get to a place with your business that requires maybe special tax planning, or maybe you need to have contracts drawn up that are, you know, complicated. So those two are, in my view, myths of the 21st century.
Uh-huh.
What you do need is you need to have a financial cushion, and you need to be clear on who's your ideal customer, what's your point of differentiation, and how are you going to communicate that differentiation to your ideal customers. And then have systems that ensure that your receipts are not in a shoebox. Because you know what? Your receipts are likely going to come from online purchases. So you will either have to be diligent and disciplined about printing them out, or you're going to have to do a lot of backtracking. So how much better would it be to set up a system, you know, an online bookkeeping tool that allows you to just import those receipts right into it?
Can you tell me the name again? I'm sorry, Anne. What is the name of this bookkeeping system?
Well, there are a number of them. You know, QuickBooks is probably the most popular.
Okay.
QuickBooks. And, you know, the things that your bookkeeper will do when you have sufficient revenue to, you know, delegate that task, there are online tools, online versions of QuickBooks that will allow you to import your bank statement so that reconciling the bank statement is not such an onerous task as it used to be. And that leads me to, you know what you're good at. Know what is your own highest and best use, and delegate those things that are not in your basket of specialized skills and expertise. Hire someone to do those tasks the very minute that you can afford to. That might include, you know, having a housekeeper. That might include having a dog walker. That might include having a bookkeeper. It might include having somebody write for you or do your social media so that you are using your power where it generates the greatest return.
I find, Anne, that at the very beginning, when you're working, starting out your business, that can be tricky because the revenue hasn't come in yet, so you're trying to do it all, and you can exert energy in the wrong direction and not for why you're in business, not where your passion is at, not as to your why. So absolutely, that is an ideal situation. And one that I have found personally really challenging, because I do like to learn and I want to keep up with all the different systems that are out there. But at some point in time, it's knowing when you have to let it go. And in connecting with people, making relationships with other women and men in business, and what do you use? You know, what's the best method that's been really beneficial for you to grow your own business? So it's asking for help and be willing to put yourself out there and not so concerned so much about judgment, but willing to ask for help and assistance at times when you really do need it so that you can propel yourself further and faster.
Well, that's a very, very good point. And, you know, often people who start their business and work from home, or even if they, you know, rent a small facility somewhere, they spend a lot of time alone, they can lose their confidence, lose their effervescence, lose their drive through lack of contact and interaction with other human beings. So even if your business doesn't require that you are out networking and meeting other people. Mm-hmm. I recommend that you have a support network. Someone,
yeah.
And, you know, I read somewhere that, you know, a woman needs like 5 different kinds of boyfriends. And it's sort of like that. Somebody to laugh with, somebody to cry with, somebody who will just listen, someone who knows more than you do and is willing to share it. And you might not find that all in one person. So you need to have a network and
absolutely.
Make sure that you get out into the world and meet other people and talk to other people and show up the way that you want to be perceived. So you need to decide about your own executive presence.
Yes, absolutely.
I heard a funny story from a woman who has written a book, and her whole theory is aimed at women, and her book title is Selling in a Skirt.
I love that.
Well, sure, we all love that. And when she speaks, of course, she wears a skirt and high boots. And so one day she was at the post office, and she was there to send out copies of her book to people who had purchased them online. And she was dressed in sweatpants and a sweatshirt. And when she got to the front of the line, the guy behind the counter said to her, "Where is your skirt?" And she, you know, was taken aback. But the people behind her in line, you know, were all curious now, why would he ask her that question? And so he actually spoke to them and said, "This is this woman, her book title is Selling in a Skirt. This is her mantra, and look at how she's dressed."
That is so fun. I love it.
So she tells that story on herself. And she said, "Do you think I ever went to the post office again in sweatpants or anything other than a skirt? Not on your life, because I realized that I am my own brand, and I can't maintain that if I don't support it in every action that I take."
I think it's important to make ourselves get out of our home. I'm finding after being, excuse me, my throat here, but I'm finding after leaving the downtown corporate office, I'm not dressing up the way that I used to. I'm in my house. I'm not being public. In fact, I can become somewhat of a hermit. So I've decided, since I've moved back to the city that I used to work in for so many years, excuse me, that I need to join maybe that Chamber of Commerce and the associations that I was involved in, pick up my membership again, and just show up. Making my connections. And it is a confidence builder, and you can lose your confidence, absolutely. And the longer that you're out of the mainstream corporate, for example, for myself, it can take a toll on you in different ways. I know many entrepreneurs that they are not out in the public. They are working in their home. They're connecting with other entrepreneurs, which is great. But we still, it could be that monthly meeting with e-commerce or whatever it is, but forcing yourself to get out for that luncheon, to hear the guest speaker, meeting other women, and just getting in that energy of other entrepreneurs. I think that's really important to do that.
Absolutely. And learning, you know, try to learn something new every day. It'll keep you fresh and on your game. Now, most of my employees work from home offices. And we had a centralized office, so we were a bricks and mortar operation in downtown Calgary, where people came on public transit and drove and, you know, dressed for the office before we had business casual Monday to Friday. And when they went to work from home offices, many of them had a challenge making that transition. And you know, they often said things to me like, it'll be great, I can work in my pajamas and nobody will care. And so I started doing workshops for my own employees before I got set them free into working in their own offices, to talk about your executive presence, your business presence, and dressing for the job. So, of course, I'm not going to be there to see whether you do this or you don't. But let me tell you how I run my life. I get dressed every morning. I do my hair. I put on makeup. I dress so that I could go out the door to a meeting at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to work. So when I sit down, I am fully present in my executive presence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that happen every day? Well, it happens 363 days out of the year. And on those 2 days that manage to slip somehow, maybe I have a call at 6:30 in the morning and I don't get up early enough, so now I'm at my desk in my dressing gown and I haven't brushed my hair or washed my face. And the next thing I know, it's 3:00 in the afternoon. I haven't even brushed my teeth. That's how it happens. And it's not ever my best day. Not ever. So, you know, that is why I say to you, 363 days of the year at the moment, and maybe next year it'll be 365, that I dress for the day and don't allow any deviation away from that. There is nothing to be gained working in your pajamas, or naked for that matter. Truly, it's not going to make you feel more powerful.
Well, I do remember people saying that myself, and I know, and I agree with you. You know, I definitely put the makeup on, and my hair can be somewhat okay. But, you know, it is important, because with the Facebook Live, if you mm-hmm. work on Zoom or work on Skype, and I know I do that with my clients, you do have to have a good presence. So I think it's a great habit to get into. And, of course, there's many more that you could add to that, like, you know, whatever, yoga or walking or whatever it is for the day, just to get you in the right space and that feel-good mode. So, yeah, that's all very important, isn't it, as an entrepreneur, just to prepare yourself like you were going to work for the most part, you know, how you dress,
well,
how you feel.
How you speak, yes, mm-hmm. how you conduct yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who are going to work in an environment where there are other people, to realize that as the entrepreneur, you have to be the sunshine for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what's happening, you need to be the one that is encouraging, is supportive, as, you know, cheerleading
yeah.
for the whole group. Which means you cannot show up looking tired.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot show up needing a haircut or with runs in your pantyhose. Like, you really need to step into that leadership role. And I'm not sure that all entrepreneurs realize that they will need to do that. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I know they don't all need to do that, because some of
mm-hmm.
them find themselves suddenly they're the reluctant or the accidental leader, and they don't really know what to do. Like, I never, you know, I hear things like, I never saw myself having to tell people what to do or
mm-hmm.
having to, you know, coach them because they're coming to work late or they're not, you know, paying attention to detail. I didn't see myself having to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the skills. So when you realize that you don't have the skills that are needed for a particular area of activity, then I encourage you to get those skills and get the support that you need. If you need a coach, and pretty much every leading
uh-huh.
CEO, business owner, president has a coach, just ask them. The other thing those leading company leaders have is a forum. A peer forum. That's not pure, that's P-E-E-R.
Okay.
A group of people that they can go to. Sometimes it's called an advisory board. Sometimes you can do it together. You know, there are organizations that offer this service. If you're not in a place where you can afford to join one of those, form your own. Get a group of non-competing businesses together and share your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Be a support for one another. Do you find that women do support one another? Or has there been a lack of support in sometimes, well, when it's a male-dominated industry? I am going to say that, but where they're competing for, you know, women competing for positions that are held by men, that I have seen personally where, you know, there maybe not be the support that's required. So, and that's just my own personal experience. Now, if it's in an industry where there is, you know, equal men and women, perhaps that's not the case. But what's your experience for women supporting women?
It's been very disappointing. So let me say that straight up.
Okay.
And, you know, you can research this, and there's anthropological reasons why women compete with other women. We must find a way to change that, because if we continue to undermine one another through neglect or actively, we will not ever reach a parity position in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's so important to find who you connect with. So if you're feeling attracted to someone's energy and you don't know why, but you could just talk to that other woman for ongoing, like you've known them for years, perhaps that's a person to connect with. Perhaps it could be yourself as a coach. You know, whoever you're attracted to energy-wise, perhaps those are the people that you need to have as your support team. I know I'm involved in a few different groups, and I'm very much about supporting other women. But I have to be also aware of people that may want your energy and could drag down your energy. So there's kind of a fine balance at times. So we have to really listen to our intuition and who's the right fit to support you in your career.
Well, absolutely. And these are all, you know, multiple layers of finding your own power and finding your place in the world where you can make your greatest contribution and reach your own highest personal potential.
Yes. So, Anne, before we close up the hour here, again, you do coaching, you do one-on-one and group coaching. When people want to find out more about you, I know you do have a website, but I think you have a few of them, do you? But anyways, if you can just keep your information out, I'd appreciate that, how they can get in contact with you.
Right. So you can phone me. I have a personal toll-free number, which comes right to my desk, and that number is 1-888-281-3074. I'll repeat that, 888-281-3074. Or you can reach me by email at anne@anneminer.com. That's Anne with an E, like Anne of Green Gables, and Miner with an E, like the gold miner. And those are probably the two easiest. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. So all of those social media options are available as well. And of course, my website, anneminer.ca. AnneMiner.com. Sorry about that.
Okay, perfect. So any wise closing words for this conversation today?
Well, my very, very biggest wish for all women is that you would take the risk to follow your heart and realize your dreams. There's no reason whatsoever that you cannot do that. Just go for it.
Love it. Thank you, Anne. Wise words.
My absolute pleasure.
I appreciate you coming on, and I'm looking forward to being in contact with you, obviously, in the future. And you're an inspiration, and I feel so much in alignment with you, and I think many women will also feel the same way when they spend some time with you, like I've had the opportunity to do that. So thank you again for coming on. We need leaders. We need women who support one another, and you have the track record to do that, and thank you for that.
My absolute pleasure.
So we'll say goodbye for now, and talk to everybody later. And this recording will actually be on my website here in a while, a short while. The website name is whisperingenergetic.ca, whisperingenergetic.ca. And I'll be loading it as well on my Facebook, which is Brenda Lainoff. That's L-A-I-N-O-F. So, okay, take care, Anne, and we'll be talking to you shortly.